Welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
So there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, Andy, but I think it's probably best to start with the most momentous news of the day, if not the week. The Tasmanian team seems to be an inevitability to be announced tomorrow. How do you feel about that? You're probably less biased on this front than I am.
Yeah, which is why I'm going to let you talk about it. And maybe you could and nicely avoided the game. And the game was on.
Oh no, I haven't even started to avoid the game.
Okay. Well, I mean, the game was almost as excruciating to watch as it was to no doubt listen to our podcast on 5 second delay last week. But look, Nick, explain to me why I should be happy about the Tasmanian team, other than it's, you know, culturally it's good for Tasmania to have a team.
Well, look, it is an original AFL state. It's half a million people who have AFL as their primary, as their first winter love. It's a proud footy state. Plenty of champion players, many of whom have played for Richmond. And look, they have six games a year already. Like, it's not all that much more to transition to having 11 games a year in the broader scheme of things. But yeah, there's also a reason why they haven't had a team. So I do, and particularly the stadium, I feel very conflicted about.
Yeah, look, very few people are publicly willing to state why it's been so long to give Tasmania a team and perhaps some of the downsides to it. And I'm not going to be one of them and those people aren't saying it publicly for a good reason, and I'm not going to say it on the podcast. But one thing
it's pretty obvious. Like, if you think, where does Hobart rank on the list of Australia's biggest cities? Not very highly. Half the population of Canberra.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a problem, isn't it? And not great, yeah, not great demographics. And anyway, but
they are. Tasmania's population is actually properly growing for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah, but
the economy is a bit on the up. But
you've made the key point. Hobart's Tasmania's not whole entity. But Nick, more importantly, this is Richmond Tiger Talk. Selfishly,
I know.
Let's stop talking about.
Selfishly, no club has done better out of Tasmania.
So selfishly, it's probably not. Oh, sorry, morally, there's a great argument, no doubt, and you know, plenty of people can make that argument. But
yeah, I
can't help but feel that they not only do we lose a great recruiting ground, well, at least partly lose it, but I'm also worried about the potential of losing our CEO, which we might have lost anyway. But you know, there are definitely some Richmond-specific downsides to this.
Yeah, totally. Historically we've had, there have been champion Tasmanian players for other teams, but, you know, as a proportion, Richmond ranks pretty highly, you know. A lot of Hart, Richardson, Gale, Roach, that's a lot of the goals. That's a lot of the goals we've kicked in recent years. And fast forward to the present day, and we have more Tasmanians on our list than any other team. So, yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah, so, and look, you can't stop it. And if they've now got so much funding for the stadium, it's going to happen. But I can't, like, it's not, I wasn't, the timing is slightly unfortunate, because presumably next year's, I'd be quite happy if next year's draft is compromised. Start taking the Tassie Keens out now, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, no, they're 5 years away. And I think they'll probably, about 3 years, they'll start. We're probably 3 years away from them starting to do funny buggers, I would have thought.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with that because that, selfishly, and maybe I've started to think more about draft picks in recent days. but yeah, is there anything else you want to say about the Tassie team?
Oh, look, I reckon it'll be fun. I hope to pick a good name. Like, I think, honestly, part of the impetus for the Tassie team has just been how wildly successful the basketball team has, and that's partly the NBL's in a bit of a growth spurt as well. But they did a lot of things right in connecting with grassroots basketball. You know, the name's kind of catchy and distinctive. Yeah, the AFL doesn't. Yeah, the winter playing field's pretty level, but yeah, the Jack Jumpers have been a big success.
And unintended Richmond connection. Now, Nick, I'm curious to see what other topics you'll bring up. NFL draft. NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs. Got some ice hockey takes.
The ice hockey is the most fun sport for being like the Boston Bruins are literally had the best regular season of all time and they just lost in the first round. Ice hockey is completely random in its playoff. And I'm not sure how much fun that would be to follow.
No, I agree. Actually, it is. It's a funny old sport. So you don't want to comment on the value of first round running backs and the salary cap implications of that? Anything else, perhaps?
Well, I did have another Richmond topic I wanted to raise with you. And you know, we've been blessed with a spate of Richmond books of all types in recent years. But I just finished the Neil Baum book last week, and yeah, that is a really unique. He's a unique character in the game, like as he himself acknowledges, the transition from 70s hard man to 1980s premiership coach in South Australia. Unsuccessful stint with Melbourne in the 1990s, and then this fantastic career, in a variety of sort of job titles, but all as sort of the football Svengali, off field at Collingwood, Geelong, Collingwood again, Richmond, where he's won a spate of premierships, and every time, at least part of his great skill seems to be in helping to manage the maniacal senior coach and helping the coaching staff work together, helping the footy department staff work with the connecting. Like, it's hard to actually describe what he does, but it's clearly, the relentless success that he's had off the field. Well, it's kind of fascinating.
Well, the way you characterise it to me is that he said he was more successful as a football manager and look than a coach. And look, in fairness, he was quite a... He had a good run as a coach. As he seems to think, I'm paraphrasing you here, paraphrasing him, that he was maybe a bit too nice to be a senior coach.
Yeah, he says that, this reputation as a hard man sort of belies someone who's really thoughtful and connected with players in a way that he was somehow before his time and then of his time into his 50s and 60s, which is pretty extraordinary, and now he's almost without peer of his generation still involved at a high level in footy. It's been Yeah, it's been a really unique time. It is. One thing I was struck by as well, I mean, struck by many things, the description of 25-year-old Neil Baum going to Tommy Hafey and suggesting that perhaps they could get the midfielders to kick the ball to the side where the forward had the advantage against his man. Tommy Hafey telling him to go and get it. was pretty funny. But also, you know, he's been involved in these very successful setups, but you know, all of them had, you know, nothing in football stays static, and they all evolve over time, and you know, what has been a successful formula sometimes runs its course. And yeah, I've been thinking about that a fair bit the last week.
Thank you. That magnificently transitioned into the game. And there was something that I really noticed from the game. And there's a... I'd already pulled the stats, but the Herald Sun had a good article about this today, but by Sam Landsberger. I know it's behind a paywall, so we can't refer it to people. But something happened on the weekend that I just noticed. It was quite a defensive game. Both teams had players back. I mean, yes, it was a horrible watch, but there was a lot of intercept marking in the game. And we got done on the intercept marks by -6. And that's about the average. That's bad. It's not disastrous. But it was against a team that's not very good at intercept marking.
No, Charlie Ballard.
As a team, they don't have great numbers on this. And this is the real difference this year from any of the other Richmond since 2017. You know, some years we're good at contested possession and clearances. Mostly we haven't been. You know, there's a few key metrics that have been consistent throughout over the last 5 years, and the intercepts is, you know, absolutely one. There's some other ones scoring from forward half turnover and other things, but which aren't public. But this is the thing that's like really, you know, a sign that the system's not working is that we're getting done on the intercept marks against teams that aren't very good at it, like the weekend. And yeah, it's it feels like, obviously some things aren't as working as well as they used to, because everyone's forward hand passing now, and the sort of other teams know how to defend it better. But yeah, there's no doubt the system isn't working as well as it once was.
It's not. I do. When you're pointing, it was a very defensive game. I don't know. I'm not particularly inclined to point the fingers at a defence that, you know, gave up 17 scoring shots, 53 inside 50s. Like, that's not a bad... It's not exceptional, but it's certainly not a bad day at the office. I don't know. I think...
Yeah,
I was just going to say, like, somehow the magic that we had last year with, you know, we were the highest scoring team in the league, and we found a combination that just clicked and was fast and dynamic. And it really is not working. Like the mix of players isn't right, particularly with Marshielli Jr. Suffering for form and now out with injury. Yeah, I think George is a bit of a loss in the absence and the pressure he creates. And yeah, the forward 50 entries have been a problem as well, and Tom Lynch is out injured. Like, the guy, yeah, the forward line's a problem.
Yeah, look, the intercepts, it's a team dynamic. You know, it depends on a lot of things, including pressure.
Mm.
And it's a for and against measure. So we're getting intercepted a lot in the forward line. And, you know, you really, Ballard and Jack was just, it was just not the right matchup. And it was, you know, the stats speak for themselves about the possession differential and the intercept differential, which you meant, you mentioned they had two players in with 10 intercepts. It's just the, we're not creating, our forward line is just, for whatever reason, anemic. And, you know, we're bottom for scoring from our forward half from turnovers, which is just so un-Richmond-like. The pressure game's not there at all.
The lack of explosive pace and running power. Yeah, we're really missing it. And look, it is, it's a difficult position to play in. We've cycled through a lot of guys through our era with some success, but yeah, does feel a bit like the music's stopped and the cupboard's looking pretty bad.
Yeah, that, who would have thought? I mean, I wouldn't have said this, but like you've mentioned it a few times in the pre-draft, but shows. But as much as I thought Dimmer overplayed Bansal, and also, you know, we're not big fans of the, we weren't big fans of the Cochin forward experiment, and I'm even less so in practice. But I think both were signs that Dimmer realized, perhaps that Dimmer realized that the problem was coming, because it's a real identifiable need that our small forward pressure and creativity, both defensively and on the attacking end, is really lacking. And it's easy to blame Dusty, but actually Dusty's pressure numbers are fine considering how much offensive output he's getting. In fact, I think he had a record on the Herald Sun measure, a record pressure points measure that I've ever seen him, like, well better than I've ever seen him do before. And in a position in off the half forward line, mainly he got a few center square reps this week, but it's not a position that you naturally do well in those statistics. So yeah, it's just, it's a noticeable weakness in the team. And I agree, you know, the defense wasn't perfect, but Nick Fosstone, I think, probably had his best game of the year overall, not necessarily on the stats, but was very solid without making the notable howlers that sort of happened last week.
He had 10 intercepts. Like, that's a pretty big...
Yeah, no, great game.
...number, and... Tyler Young had 8 intercepts, which is, good number for anyone, and a clear career high.
Tyler didn't have the best game, though. I think it's fair to say.
No, he didn't. But he still had a ton of contests. Like, it is, it's fascinating how much we trust him. But sometimes it doesn't work. But yeah, he's the number of contests he's having, like, is extremely high. He's second in 1%ers per game in the whole competition.
Look, one thing I know. I mean, supporters are going to be down on him after that absolute howler with the intercept. But one thing I liked about that was afterwards he kept trying to attack and get the football, presenting an option. Like, it was
defenders need short memories.
Yeah, so I did appreciate the fact how he look. It's a king. One king is a very, very hard matchup, and that he is. And look. Until the last quarter, when we sort of got a lot of football when they were sagging back so far, they had by far the more inside 50s. So they were plus 11 at half time, as the commentary noted multiple times. It's not, you know, the game wasn't, your point about it's hard to blame the defenders. No, that game was not the defenders' fault.
2 goals, 9 at half time. 1 goal, 5 from set shots.
The expected, our expected points was actually exactly what we scored by the slightly more advanced measure. So, yeah, we're just, the thing
that,
is
That's for the game, the first half.
Yeah. True. But the thing that, and look, there were some gettable shots there, but we're not getting the easy shots anymore. Like maybe we just focused on too much on this podcast, but we haven't always been a great goal kicking team, and we've got a few guys who are particularly bad shots for goal in the team at the moment, but like we're just not getting easy shots either.
No, I mean there's a big Tom Lynch sized hole in, well, and we're not kicking the ball to the top of the goal square nearly as much. I mean, I thought that was particularly apparent in the Melbourne game, where we were trying to avoid Lever and Gorn and Grundy desperately, but yeah, they're both the marks not taken at the top of the goal square, but the front and centres not created as a result. Clearly apparent.
Now, one thing I was going to save this to a bit later, but one thing I'm thankful for is I'm glad, 2016 was obviously a worse season than this one.
Yeah, it was terrible.
One thing that infuriated me even more than the losing was, say, there was when we played Essendon I don't think it was the first or second time, but Essendon were terrible that year. You know, they were still decimated post-drug scandal. And Dimmer, we played a really defensive game.
They're not still decimated?
Well, we'll see. Let's not trash talk them too much till we beat them in Dreamtime.
They are going better than us.
There was some infuriating selection choices and then some infuriating game style decisions. And one thing I'm grateful for this year, it's a small mercy, I know, but we don't have any sort of journeyman list plugger types on the list at the moment. Like the older guys who are struggling are guys who've earned the right to struggle. They're multiple premiership players.
Club champions.
Oh, three-time club captain. Three-time premiership captain. I am grateful that there's no break glass journeyman to go back to. So
Taylor Hunt.
I can't, like, Swansea was genuinely awful in this game. Awful. Nah. But
yeah, not good.
I don't blame them for playing him.
No, because he was great in the VFL
2 weeks before.
Three weeks ago?
Yeah, because that's right, because he sat out. But yeah, look, he's definitely struggled in the seniors, but he's played decent seniors football before. Mm. Like, so, and I know we're an old team, but at least they're giving those guys a crack. And I guess that goes to the highlight of maybe the game. While I'm building up to a, I don't know, maybe this isn't quite the highlight. Before we should acknowledge that Jaden Short was really good. Demonstrated why we struggled without him. Over 30 possessions, really good meters gained. Tim Taranto, by the way, Nick, not only was very good game on the stats, but also good game on the AFL ratings, best on ground. Last time I'll mention them in this podcast.
Don't make promises you can't keep. I did wonder how long it was going to take you to mention that half our goals were kicked by Ruckman.
Yeah, look, we'll come to Soldo, but what do you think of Samson Ryan? Nick, I've been accused, I should set this up by saying, I've been accused of being a ruck apologist. I know it's not, it's outrageous, completely unfounded, I know, but I can be get a little bit excited about Richmond Ruckman. So what did you viewer?
Look, I think it is a bit of a roller coaster ride with Samson, but it is the talent is tangible, and is he ready to be a consistent contributor at senior football? Probably not. Is he going to learn much more from dominating VFL opponents? Probably not. I did set you homework today, where I asked you to think about what was the last goal kicked by a ruckman out of a ruck contest that was more exciting than the one that Samson Ryan kicked.
And I know you did, and I haven't researched, but it was a goal Nant kicked in the fourth quarter against a really good opposition that sort of gave us the crucial lead.
Oh, they won. Yeah, I can remember it.
I've got it in my head.
Right hand pocket, right foot snap. Yeah, I can remember it. I can't remember who.
So there was a couple of things about that goal. One, he was able to do it.
Yeah.
But the
athleticism was absurd.
Yeah, and interestingly, really reminds us that how badly he's got the goal-kicking hips off the set shot, because he's got the skills. He just needs not to have to think when he's shooting. Look, every game, even before that moment, every game he does something with his ball use, with his defensive positioning, with his hard... Like, when he was playing forward, he was chasing
sometimes with his marking.
Yeah,
sometimes
look,
his tap outs. Yeah,
there's so many good flashes, and he's got football sense. Like he's really he's a very exciting prospect. Look, you know, full acknowledgement. Yes, he stroke like him in the defensive 50 with Witz is trouble, and it was, and he's not perfect, and Witz is big and strong, and he's going to struggle with him.
Mm.
But he so many times does good things and wins taps you don't expect him to, because he's just got that. Not only he's a true 206 centimeter guy. He's got long arms. He's what we hoped Liam McBee would be, except taller. And I've been holding back on him because all those marks in the VFL was like, a lot of hacks take Lima being kicked goals for days in the VFL.
He kicked them from one of the things I loved about Liam McBean was how good he was at converting, which Samson's never shown a, he's fine, but he's never shown that sort of kick them from anywhere. Ability, but yeah, he's a really exciting prospect. You can make a pretty good argument that Noah Cumberland and Samson Ryan are the second and third best players to come out of the Brisbane Lions Academy in the past 5 years, behind only I really like Caden Coleman, and he'd probably have him first, but yeah. Yeah, Ryan and Cumberland would be the next two, which is quite something.
Yeah, and look, on Cumby, he was heavily tagged during the game. I think it's the last time Dimmer's going to try that calling him out in a press conference tactic, because, it may be coincidence, but correlation is causation, and yeah, it was that was his worst game of AFL, I think.
We really need him to be better than that.
True. And Nick, it was his first shot on goal, which he missed, was all set up by a Soldo push in the back. So I'm going to tangent to, I was very nervous before the game. I wasn't sure how he'd be.
Were you even more nervous when Wintz took the ball out of the very first centre bounce?
Yeah, that was quite a power. Actually, before I forget, we really muscled up on Scholl. We clearly think every chance, every player was getting stuck into him. You know, you can see what the tactic was in. But yeah, that was a very big alpha move by Witz. But, you know, all things considered, I was actually pretty happy with how Soldo got round the ground. He kicked the goal. He missed another shot, unfortunately.
I really thought he'd kick that one too. It was just in his 30 metres is a sweet spot for him.
Yeah, and then there was the moment where he passed off at the end of the game, where was the point I needed to walk away from the game for about 60 seconds after that. I was so annoyed because I thought he was going to do it, because he was really struggling with his kicking, and the goal he kicked only just cleared the line from a much closer position. And, you know, maybe it's his foot, or maybe it's just his like he seems to have lost penetration on his goal kicking.
Well, it was the official podcast poo-pooed the idea of him coming straight back into the team. And look, we didn't even really talk about it as much as we normally would, because we just assumed that somebody who'd been out for that long would need a game in the VFL. So yeah, we did. Honestly, we threw him to the wolves a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's most annoying about that last second shot, aside from, you know, all the mockery I've received in personal messages from people, is he's kicking to Duranto, who was like the least likely guy to kick that on the team. So maybe not the least likely, but yeah.
No, he's not above. Soldo's got a much better track record of kicking goals than him. Soldo is well above average.
Yeah. But I feel like it's got longer in my head, but it feels like his goal in the 2019 grand final wasn't about that range. It was a little bit closer, but it was such a terrible moment. But
yeah, he's 17 goals 9 for his career, right? He could have kicked him.
All right, yeah, exactly. Ben Miller, I thought he struggled. Look, the game plan clearly was throw as many bodies as wits as possible.
Felt a bit operational, sacrificial lamb.
It did. And he wasn't great forward, and everyone's noticed it. There was a stretch in the third where, if you actually have a look at Witz barely got a touch in the third quarter. I think he got zero or one. And a lot of that was Ben Miller, because Ben Miller just followed him around the ground for about 8-9 minutes. I actually thought they were going to sub him after that, but no, just Swansea's non-performance, which is really, you don't want to be, when you're playing three rucks, you don't want to have to sub one of your small guys because he's not getting the footy. And
he wasn't getting the footy.
Yeah. So that probably wasn't the plan, but that's what they had to do. Anyone else, individuals you want to talk about?
Oh, look, I always, I don't think we don't talk about Marlon Pickett enough. I feel like he's properly rated in this podcast and in our hearts. But yeah, I don't feel like he's letting us down at all.
Yeah, fair enough. We played him forward a bit more, which probably not his ideal position, but he's in the end, he had 18 disposals. A lot more in the second half, where I think we moved him up the ground a bit more.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the win suits him.
Don't want to dwell on it, but Noah Bolter had zero touches in the second half.
Yeah.
And Cochin and Rumolt.
Yes, he did.
Cochin and Rumolt had three combined in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't great. I did, looking at that game, I really understood why we drafted Josh Gibkiss, who's 190 centimeters with a big leap. Those King boys are very big targets, and yeah, tough matchups.
Indeed. I thought K-Mac was quite good too.
And look, Liam Baker, as ever, leaves nothing in the tank. Pretty disappointing. Sadly, our VFL team also got beaten reasonably badly. Perhaps the most noticeable thing about the game, the Suns had 22 listed AFL listed players, and we had 7. If you sort of want some idea about how the season's going.
Yeah, it says it all, really. Individually, though, Dow had a pretty good game.
He did. 28 disposals, 11 clearances. That's a good day.
Rowsmith obviously kicked 2 goals, 21, which is good for him.
One of them from 55 metres. Yep, very impressive.
For a respond.
Sam Banks is a bit of a... is building into his work. I think.
I knew you'd want to talk. That's why I didn't mention him, because I was leaving him to you. But the question I have for you is, seeing your debut?
Oh, if only he was in any way competent as a forward. Maybe. I don't know. It's tricky. It's honestly tricky to fit him in. Like, Jaden, like he's either a wing or a half back, and, you know, K-Mac, Pickett, Short, Dan Rioli. It's tricky to find a spot for him. You'd think, so he's out of contract at the end of 2025. God, do you think whoever they appoint to do recruiting for the new Tassie club, you'd think they'd be calling him up already?
Yeah, indeed.
Jacob Bauer, not quite as good as he's been in recent weeks, but it's still pretty good. Like, I think, God, I'd like for Banks to debut, but I'd be even more intrigued to what Bauer would look like in seniors. And he has.
Where would he play though?
Well, that is a tricky point. Like, you'd have to, would you think about dropping Tyler Young? I don't know. Yeah, it's a bit of an awkward fit, but yeah, I do. I really like how he's gone as a defender the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely intriguing, right?
Hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. Look, I liked him as a forward. I like him even better. As a defender, like he just seems a more instinctive ball winner, and the marking holds up at either end of the ground. But yeah, just his reading of the play, and winning some uncontested ball is happening more easily. For a final mention for the VFL, Ryan Mansell, 5 tackles and 3 goals as a small forward.
Hmm. Yeah, I must admit, it was one of my darker moments when I realised I wouldn't mind if he got picked this week. I tried to talk myself into, maybe he's learning some forward craft in the VFL. You know, he might be able to keep him there. Well, it doesn't quite work like that with forward craft, but, you know, hope springs eternal. After this week, after this weekend, I'm open to anything.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of teams having a disappointing season, I don't think disappointing quite covers it.
Yeah. So we've had about 38 minutes of podcast, and all of which, you know, we've either avoided talking about or procrastinated about talking about how bad we are, or, you know, with a pretty heavy heart, talked through what's been a very disappointing season. And we're nearly 40-point favourites on the weekend. Like, it's just... Words can barely express how bad the West Coast Eagles are travelling at the moment.
Oh, it's just extraordinary. Like, I was just doing some research on, like, who's been playing well for them this year, and it's, like, it's abysmal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's... And look, they've got a affiliate waffle team that's almost playing. There's talk that their waffle team won't have any AFL listed players this weekend, which is, yeah, it's incredible. If you want to talk about possible strengths, they've still got, Jack Darling's still there. Obviously, Kennedy's retired, but Oscar Allen is very quietly breaking out as one of the better marking forwards in the game. He's who's fourth in marks inside 50 per game, 18 goals on the season. And for a non-competitive team, that's pretty good. Nick Nat's out, so Bailey Williams is first ruck. And he's a pretty good athlete, but it's by no means as intimidating as what's Jared Witt's into Gorham Grundy that we've been through the past few weeks. If you want to, Reuben Gibney, who's a top 10 draft pick last year, is an absolute tackling machine, which is unusual for a teenager, he's shown some good signs, but yeah, he's a real hard nut. And there's a lot of the old familiar names in midfield, and sort of it's hard to look at. You know, Gaff, Kelly, Domsheed might be back this week. And they've lost at home by 108 points. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, that's just speaking of, I mean, they hit the wall of their style of play becoming desperately unfashionable and ineffective much quicker after their premiership singular run. It's fallen in a heap, isn't it? By the way, Barras is having his career best season on some measures.
He's not lacking for opportunities. Not kicking it down his throat all day would be a good thing.
Yeah, look, there is a thing like who's playing best for Richmond? It's all the guys in the mid-20s. You know, guys who are young and guys who are old tend not to play so well. And, you know, Barras is 28. He's in his prime. So is Tim Kelly, by the way, and having just an okay season by his standards.
Yeah. Yeah, Andrew Gaff's, I suppose, in a similar age range. But, yeah, they're
Gaff's not having a good season, though.
No. No, it is. And I mentioned Gibney, but yeah, they've got a hole in the list from the Tim Kelly trade. Well, and also being winning the premiership means you lack for high draft picks for a while. But yeah, there's a real hole in the list of emerging young players as well. So, yeah.
All right.
We really need to win this by comfortably.
Indeed.
Just to state the blinding, the obvious. I'm glad we're back at the MCG.
Glad at the MCG. It'd just be nice to see. What are we really? I put it to you before, when we were all a bit depressed yesterday. Mm. You know, what does good look like, even if we don't make finals? Like, we want to see the young players in playing well, and like, there's a chance that, you know, Brown, Banks, Gibkus, Sonzi will learn how to play footy again, but they all might be in the team later in the second half. Maybe, as you point out, Banks with the most to struggle to get a spot, but, you know, that's just what we want to see. There's a bit of hope for the future because, you know, Samson's giving us a lot of hope. And
yeah, that's true. I'd like to see Noah playing well again. It has. We've mentioned it before, but it has been a great frustration this season. Is the sheer range of injuries to younger players. Like, we had 5 minutes of Bradkey, and he looked kind of good in one game, and then he was injured at the start of his third game, and we haven't seen him since. Brown hasn't played a VFL game. Seth Campbell's played one game. Gibkus hasn't played a game. Yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah, indeed. I think we've gone far too long for the limited amount of Richmond fans who are currently absorbing Richmond podcasts. But yeah, it's...
Look, we can work through the pain together.
Green shoots on the weekend.
Hopefully. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
Hey, I should have asked you, what...